It's time to get down to business with $30 a month business internet. WOW Business offers 99.9% network reliability so that you can keep your business moving. $30 a month gets you 30 megabytes per second with 24/7 US-based support, a price lock guarantee, and a 60-day satisfaction guarantee. Lock in our lowest priced offer for the support you need. Go to switchtowellbusiness.com. Offer for new customers with a 2-year agreement subject to change. Prices do not include taxes, fees, and equipment charges. Restrictions apply.
Hey everyone, it's Billy Morrison and Ozzy Osbourne here. Our new show, The Madhouse Chronicles, is dropping this April. Join us as we watch and react to the maddest internet clips. What do we discuss, Ozzy?
Drugs, rock and roll, aliens, all that kind of shit.
Drugs, rock and roll, aliens, and all that kinds of shit. Visit osbournemediahouse.com for early access. What do you say? Do you think it's the wildest show on the internet?
You're in the madhouse now.
This is Diana Kander, author of Go Big or Go Home, 5 Ways to Create a Customer Experience That Will Close the Deal, and you are listening to The Marketing Book Podcast.
Welcome to The Marketing Book Podcast, helping you keep up with the smartest thinking in the quickly changing field of modern marketing. And now, here's your host, Douglas Burdett.
Hello, thanks for joining me on the Marketing Book Podcast, where each week I publish an interview with the author of a new marketing or sales book, and which has been named by Forbes and LinkedIn, amongst others, as one of the top marketing podcasts. Don't worry about taking notes. You can find links to everything linkable in this episode's website page at marketingbookpodcast.com. And since I get to read every book featured on the show, if I can recommend a specific marketing or sales book or any other resource I know of for whatever challenge you're facing, send me a LinkedIn connection invite with a message that you're a listener, and I will do my best to get you pointed in the right direction. My name again is Douglas Burdett. All right, let's get on with the show. Today we welcome Diana Kander to talk about the book she has co-authored with Tucker Trotter, Go Big or Go Home, 5 Ways to Create a Customer Experience That Will Close the Deal, published by Houndstooth Press. Diana Kander is a keynote speaker on curiosity and innovation and a New York Times bestselling author, a serial entrepreneur. She has launched and sold millions of dollars of products and services. And as a consultant, Diana has helped create multi-billion dollar products, coached boards and executive committees on innovation best practices, and implemented culture transformations. Her 2 previous books are The Curiosity Muscle, How 4 Simple Questions Can Uncover Powerful Insights and Exponential Growth, published in 2018, and All in Startup, Launching a New Idea When Everything is on the Line, published in 2014. Also, Diana can juggle and do a handstand, though not yet at the same time. And interesting fact, she was born in Odessa.
I've got Odessa on my mind.
But not Odessa, Texas. Odessa, Ukraine. Diana, congratulations on Go Big or Go Home, and welcome to the Marketing Book Podcast.
Douglas, thank you so much.
So thanks to your fellow Kansas City native, John Jantz, for the introduction.
He's the best.
Yes, he is. And he's been on the show like 5 times. I'm a big John Jantz fan. And you also have a law degree. So you're a recovering lawyer, right?
Yes, I was a lawyer for 12 months.
Okay. Well, I do hope the healing has begun. And you are not the first recovering lawyer on the Marketing Book Podcast. There have been some other authors who had law degrees and then, you know, woke up. And I just want to say, former lawyers are some of the happiest people I've ever met. But your parents want everyone to know that your sister is a doctor. Is that correct?
That's very important for me to share that with everyone.
Yeah, yeah. So you were born in Ukraine and came to the USA when you were 8 years old. And I'm glad your family made the trip. And I've had the pleasure of meeting a number of people from Ukraine. And let me just say that Ukraine girls really knock me out. They leave the West behind.
Is that right?
Yeah, yeah. Now, before I get attacked for being sexist there, I'm simply quoting the Beatles.
Well, the Ukraine girls really knock me out. Leave the West behind.
But wait, there's more. Your husband, Jason, is a New York Times best-selling author, lawyer, politician, and U.S. Army Afghanistan veteran.
Hoo-ah!
Tell us about him.
Well, I've known him since we were 17 years old.
Uh-huh. So you guys have been together about 10 years.
And we have two awesome kids together.
Oh, great, great. And you both graduated from Georgetown Law.
Respect.
And I understand you and Jason have recently started the Kansas City chapter of Overachievers Anonymous. And John Jantz is probably in that, too. Also, when I found out that, I don't want to put pressure on you here, but that you had done stand-up comedy, I knew I had to interview you. And I'm going to include a link to your stand-up performance on this episode's website page at marketingbookpodcast.com. So it's on Instagram. So let me just say, it's so cool how you asked, I've never seen this in a book, and probably been 450 or so books on the podcast. You asked readers to text you while reading the book. And I just thought that was really very innovative. And I did that, and I got a response. Now, I'm not going to mention the phone number, because, listener, if you want the number, you need to buy the dang book and start reading it, because she's going to know if you're not reading it. So that was
it's very... on page one. The phone number is on page one of the book, so yeah. It's pretty easy to find.
Well, okay. You know, if folks really want it, I'll give it to them, but they need to message me directly. So I'm going to read an excerpt from the beginning of the book, but first there's an issue that has been raised already by one of the Marketing Book podcast listeners when I posted a picture of the book on LinkedIn this week. The interview was coming up, as I do every week. Marketing Book podcast listener and ridiculously good-looking guy, but I repeat myself, Adam Torinas in Austin, Texas, asked a question that I think many listeners might be asking about the book title, Go Big or Go Home. And his question is, what if I work from home?
Idiot.
So anyway, you don't have to answer that, Diana Cantor, but I just want you to know that you have got to get up pretty early to get one over on the Marketing Book podcast listeners. So let's get to the book here. I just want to read from page 3, which is, again, a paragraph I've never seen in a book. You write, here's the big idea in 79 words. How do underdogs close huge deals they have no business winning? How do rainmakers pull off a sale before the RFP is ever issued? They don't do it with a logical argument or even the best PowerPoint presentation. They do it by designing an irresistible pitch that makes the customer think, this just feels right. This book is your blueprint for creating the memorable presentation that will speak to your customers on a subconscious level and seal the deal. You go on to write that we all need to take a deep breath, hold hands, and admit that the current model of business presentations is broken. How so?
Well, we call it in the book, B2B stands for boring to boring. And that's how most business presentations go. And that's because we fool ourselves into thinking that the people on the other side of the table are making a logical, rational argument. But they're not. They're human beings who are making decisions just like everybody else based on emotional gut instincts. And that's how we need to pitch if we want to convince our audience.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I think that's obviously one of the most important points in the book. And you underscore that humans make approximately 95% or more of all decisions made subconsciously, which I've seen before. You quoted a Harvard scientist there. Now, listen up, folks. Right out of the gate, let's put this false belief to bed. No matter how logical you think a customer is, emotion guides every buying decision they make. And the bigger decision, the more powerful the emotional component.
Can you dig it? Can you dig it? Can you dig it?
Most important point in the book, and you make it over and over again, and you prove why this approach works so well. Let's get into some of this. So you write, whatever industry you're in, whether you're running a bare-bones startup or hunting new opportunities for an established company, your goal in crafting a presentation is a simple one. It's to connect with the client on a subconscious level and remove any possibility that they might choose someone else. So, Diana Cantor, let me ask you a question.
Do you believe in magic?
I do. I believe in magic very much.
Okay.
And I want to teach other people how to do it.
Yes, yes, you do. You're like Penn and Teller in this book. you show the trick, and then you show them how to do it. So you talk about magic moments, which is the anchor of the whole concept. Why are magic moments so essential?
Well, A lot of people think about how they want the audience to feel when they're done with their presentation, but people don't feel anything for an hour. They feel things for split seconds. Mm-hmm. And so you need to be thinking about those split seconds throughout your presentation where there's some kind of magic happening, because that's the only way they're going to remember what you said. Otherwise, you're going to fall into what scientists call the forgetting curve, which says that an hour after your presentation, they will have forgotten 50% of what you said. And a week after the presentation, it's 90%. And you don't get to choose the 10%. You know, the 10% that's left is like how you styled your hair, what clothes you wore, like different verbal tics that you had. You don't get to pick that 10%. And the only way you get to mess with how much of it they'll remember is by spiking their emotional levels during the presentation by using a little bit of magic.
Can you share the story of the three law firms you were helping a client interview and try to hire?
Sure. So before I was an author, I was an entrepreneur, and one of the companies that I owned helped organizations hire and manage their legal services. And I was working with this large healthcare organization. They were hiring a new law firm. They were going to spend millions of dollars a year on them. And there were three finalists. And the first one came into the final presentations and they said, hey, there's three things that separate us from the other competition. We are the oldest law firm west of the Mississippi. We are experts in healthcare, and we are business-minded. And mm-hmm. everybody nodded, clapped, they left. They were so excited. They did so well. And the next law firm comes in, and they say, there are three things that should make you pick us. And they say the same three things. And I'm like, I got my mouth hanging open. Like, did anybody just hear that? And then the third group comes in, and I swear to you, they said the exact same three things. They're like, three reasons you should pick us.
But now, wait, were they the ones that were all wearing bow ties?
Yeah, one of them was wearing bow ties. And that's what the customer is talking about at the end of the pitches. Because if we check all the boxes that the client asked us to check during the presentation, that is a mediocre pitch. Like, we think we nailed it because we did everything they asked. But if we didn't stand out from the other people presenting, then it was mediocre, unfortunately.
So that was a great setup for, I've probably been in a zillion presentations like that where we were walking out high five and feeling really good. And then they said, yeah, we'll let you know. And then we got a lifetime subscription to voicemail. So let's walk through the magic, shall we? And the other day, James Earl Jones came by to get some more Marketing Book podcast swag. And when he found out I was going to be interviewing you, he insisted on recording some sound effects for this interview.
Excellent.
Yeah. And now he insisted on recording this first, although I told him it wasn't necessary.
I'm James Earl Jones.
But what he did is he's going to help us walk through the magic. So it's
MAGIC.
Thank you, James. Thank you, James. He's pretty excited to be part of this.
The word magic is like represents the five different things that you can do to be memorable in a presentation. These are your five tools in your tool belt, and each letter of the word magic stands for a different tool.
Right. Thank you for clarifying that. So let's go to M, which is make it surprising.
Surprise!
You write that there is a bouncer in the brain of every person you will ever pitch to. Explain.
It is called the reticular activating system. And you know, the amount of information that is affecting our brains and in front of us every day is growing at an increasing alarming rate. So today, they estimate that you are seeing about 10,000 advertisements every single day. And that is up from 5,000 advertisements like 15 years ago. So the amount of information hitting you all day long is so huge. Your brain has to protect itself because it can't process that much. So the reticular activating system is like a big bouncer. It's like, this is not for me. I don't hear this. I don't see this. And you know that it exists when you're like shopping for a new car. And now all of a sudden you see that car everywhere on the road and you're like, how did these cars become so popular? Well, they were there the whole time. Mm-hmm. It's just that your brain was preventing you from seeing them. So we need to understand how that reticular activating system works in order to get past it, just to say hello to our prospects.
Tell us about stalk and awe.
Yeah, well, that's the best way to to do it, because the first couple of times you're trying to contact somebody, they don't even hear your messages. And so the story that I shared in the book, and it's an approach I have coined, Stalk and Awe, is when I was an entrepreneur and I was trying to get into this really coveted entrepreneurship education program, I didn't qualify for any of the things you needed to qualify for the program. But I really wanted to get in. I thought it could teach me something. So I emailed the executive director. I didn't hear anything back. I called him and left a couple messages. I didn't hear anything back. And so my husband and I, we went on LinkedIn and we found everybody who we knew that knew someone who worked at this nonprofit. And we asked our friends to ask this guy to go to lunch with me. And it was like 22 people that we asked. And he showed up. He went to lunch with me. And when he walked into the building, I was just standing at the waiting area waiting for him. And he's this giant, really tall guy. He's like 6'7". And he walks in and he towers over me and he goes, "Who are you? Why do people keep coming up to me and telling me to have lunch with you?" And I'm like, "I'm already having lunch with her. I scheduled it and people are still coming up to me." And that's how you get somebody important to come speak with you. And I got into the program. So, you know, everything worked out.
So that tingling means it's working.
That's right.
How is showing someone how important they are to you a great way to grab someone's attention in a memorable way?
One of the ways that you surprise them is by bringing something with you that is about them, for them. I actually came to the podcast today, Douglas, with a gift for your audience.
Oh, excellent.
I want to share it at the end.
Excellent.
I don't want to share it right now. Let's create some anticipation, but it's pretty great.
Wow, thank you.
It's not a quiz. It's something bigger.
Keep listening, folks.
Go bigger. Anyway, when you can show them how much they matter to you with surprise by bringing them something unique that's about them and making the meeting about them, it's the best way to get things started off on the right foot.
So could you pick one example?
Sure. One of the companies that we interview, they come and they bring a gift, like a journal or something, but it's got a quote from the person that they're coming to see. I will give you an example. There's an author that I want to build a better relationship with, and I created a custom M&M dispenser with her book logo on it, and each of the M&Ms had her book logo on them.
Ah.
And I gave it as a gift, as like, this is how much the relationship means to me.
Mm-hmm.
No, I don't need anything back. I just want to show you how much I was thinking about this. And that's what surprise can do. She posted about it for maybe the second or third time. And this happened maybe 8 months ago. So she's still thinking. She just refilled her M&M dispenser. And so she's still thinking about that awesome gift that she got from Diana, because I really cared about her and I wanted to do something special. And when you give somebody something with your own logo on it, it is not special. And my friend John Rulin, who wrote the book Giftology, says you should think about like what would happen if you went to somebody's wedding and you gave them china and it had your name on it.
Yes.
How gross would that be? And that's what happens when you give people swag with your own company brand on it.
Mm-hmm. And I will include a link to his interview on the Marketing Book Podcast from a couple years ago about his book Giftology. It is, I learned so much, and it was brilliant. So the other thing I wanted to mention is that, you know, people think, oh, that sounds like it's just a real tough way to make people feel special. The fact is, hardly anyone makes prospects feel special in the first place. So you just have to be a little bit better at this first part, and it'll have a more dramatic effect than people realize.
You know, your prospect's brain is at all times being like, do I know what's happening here? Can I predict the next thing that's happening? And if it can predict what's happening next, then it will go onto autopilot. They'll start thinking about their shopping list, the car they're thinking about buying, the construction they're doing on their house. They just will not be paying attention to what you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can do something surprising, especially at the beginning of that conversation, their brain will say, oh, this is different. I haven't seen anything like this before. Let me pay attention. And so they end up paying attention to the meat of what you're saying, but you got the attention by doing something ordinary in a non-ordinary way.
Yes. Well, let's go on to
A.
Analyze them on a deeper level. Explain the one of three problem. I don't recall ever reading about that before.
Hearing the one of three problem?
Yeah.
It was labeled, I believe, by CBE Insights, but they say that most purchasers will do their own research, narrow it down to the top three firms, and then they'll just start negotiating on price because they're satisfied with whoever they get at that point. And once you get into the one of three problem, it's really impossible to stand out. So you want to stand out before you get into that final bidding war with the other two companies. You want to stand out before the RFP is even issued. That's your moment.
I want to quote from page 46. So for those who aren't paying attention,
let's talk about something important.
B2B purchasers are almost 50% more likely to buy a product or service when they see personal benefit to themselves, like an opportunity to advance their careers or merely to feel confidence or pride in their purchase decision. And they are 8 times more likely to pay a premium on a product or service when they believe personal value is present.
Sweet.
So talk about how to research individuals so that we can get just a little bit better at analyzing them on a deeper level.
Yeah, you have to do a different kind of research than most of us are doing. Most of us, we do demographic research before we talk to somebody, which is we look at how long they've been at the company, how big the company is, how many employees they have, how much money they'll be spending. And that is like creating a profile of a human-shaped wallet. Like, you could care less about this person.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
You don't really care. And that comes through in your presentation.
Yeah, it smells like commission breath.
And what we want you to do instead is to do psychographic research, which is understanding their values, their motivations, them as a person, that they have a dog that they're in love with, and this, and it, the dog brand and the dog food that they feed this dog, just like what's important, the nonprofits that they support, who they are as a person, because your opportunity to make connection with them is on the periphery of like this business deal. You're not going to make a connection by coming in saying you're the best, you have the best solution. It'll be on who they are as a human being. And that's what you want to understand.
So when I started reading the book last week, I, of course, you know, go to the very end. And I look at these, what looked like bios of you and Tucker. And I thought, God, that's kind of different.
Long.
It had like his birthday and so forth. But then you explain, talk about what you all did with those.
Yeah. So instead of author bios in this book, we included psychographic profiles. And think about, like, I want to give you an example of what profession does this really well. Lawyers who go into a courtroom and they have a jury to select. So you usually start with 36 jurors and you have to get it down to 12 people. And what usually happens when you get the names of the jurors right before they come out and you can start asking them questions, that lawyer sends them out to a, used to be a guy in a van right outside, but now a guy in his office because they have excellent internet connection. And that person starts doing research on all the names, psychographic research. So they're understanding the emotional and mental profile of all of these people. And to show you what this looks like, we did it on ourselves so that if you wanted to pitch me or Tucker, you would have a much easier time by knowing our backstory. For instance, my co-author Tucker, when he was young, his parents got divorced and his mom moved him in the middle of nowhere to live in a teepee for 3 years.
And he helped build it.
Yes, he helped build the teepee. Mm-hmm. And they had no phone. They had limited electricity. They had an outhouse that they used. And so he got to be creative because there's literally nothing else for him to do. And that is where his engineering passion started. And to know that about Tucker is to understand him on a deeper level. And to ask him about his teepee is a way to connect with him much more than coming into the meeting and being like, oh, how long have you been with DI? Oh, he started as an intern at DI, the company that he's now the CEO of. And that's an incredible story.
Mm-hmm.
So just knowing these stories about us as human beings helps us connect as human beings.
Yeah, so people that come into his business and say, so, Mr. Trotter, what keeps you up at night? Not
right.
A good idea. And I was like, you know, but you even included things Like, Tucker lives a very active lifestyle, enjoys many outdoor activities, including hunting and fishing and mountain climbing and lacrosse. I just thought it was interesting. But then it got me thinking, I've been on jury duty a few times, and I have never been picked. In fact, the last time was within, like, the last year or so I was there. And, of course, I knew, like, half the attorneys there, so that was a problem. And then, you know, I was answering the questions and revealing certain things that they wanted to know. And during the first break, after an hour, the sheriff came up to me and said, "Mr. Burdett, you're free to go." I said, you haven't even picked the jury yet. He goes, "Mr. Burdett, you're free to leave the building now, and you don't need to come back the rest of the month." So, yeah, maybe they were checking me out and whatever. I don't know. So let's go to
G.
Give the pitch in the right order. Oh, this is so important. You write that our natural instincts lead us to pitch backward.
And I would say I was falling for this until I started writing the book, until I did the research.
Oh, really?
And understood the science of how it worked. Yes. It's how I used to give presentations.
Uh-huh.
I would say, "Hey, let me tell you a little bit about myself and, you know, my background of why I'm here and then why you should listen to me." And that's how most of us go into a pitch. In fact, we do it because most of our prospects and clients say, "So tell me a little bit about yourself." But you can't fall for that. That's no different than them saying, "So how much do you cost?"
Yes.
You wouldn't fall for that. You're smart mm-hmm. enough to not fall for that. You shouldn't fall for, "So tell me about a little bit about yourself." Because what we learned is that they don't really care about yourself, and they're not really listening until they believe that you understand their point of view, that you can see things the way they see things. And until you can demonstrate that by asking questions and showing them that you see the world through their perspective, not by giving your background, but by having a dialogue about it, they're not going to pay attention to anything you're saying.
So what would be a reverse? Something like, "Yeah, I'd be happy to talk about me, but first, can we talk about you?"
Yeah, absolutely. "Can I ask you a question just before we get started? I read this really interesting thing about you living in a teepee when you were a child. Like, do you still feel the influence of that in this position? How can you use those skills?" It doesn't mm-hmm. matter. You know what it is? "I read this article that you wrote on the future of AI in our industry. I'm so curious. I just have to ask you before we get started, like, what is your passion for AI? Where do you think is going to go? Are you doing anything about it in your company?" Now we're having a conversation as opposed to being like a person pitching and a person receiving the pitch.
Right, right. like you're a dancing horse or something. Like, yeah. All right, do your thing. So interesting, on page 57, you all write about the danger of storytelling. And of course, storytelling is, you know, one of those things that's all the rage with all the cool kids. And there have been a number of books on the show that talk about that. But talk about the danger of storytelling.
Yeah, I think we say in the book that storytelling is a natural instinct, but that doesn't mean it comes naturally. So we want to tell stories, but all of us know people who take forever to get to the point of a story, or just tell stories where you're like, "I have no idea what this story is about. Please, mm-hmm. please stop telling me this story."
Now you sound like my wife, but go ahead.
I'm not going to say who I was picturing when I was describing that. But, you know, there are bad stories. And again, I was making this mistake before I started learning about the science of good story structure. I used to, when I shared my origin story on stage, I would say, "I'm a refugee from the Soviet Union. I came here with nothing. And now look at me. I'm an innovation consultant. Isn't that great?" And people would be like, "Okay, that's fine." But you're leaving out all of the interesting stuff that they can connect to.
You raced to the big finish.
That's right. That yes. We're trying to be, as business people, we're trying to be efficient with our time. And so we yada, yada, yada through all the good stuff.
Yes, yes. You know, it's funny when you say that a lot of people tell bad stories. And it brought to mind that movie from years ago, Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, with Steve Martin and John Candy, where they are on this trip trying to get home to Chicago at Thanksgiving time. And it took them forever. And Steve Martin was really getting fed up with John Candy at that part of the journey. And there's a line where he was screaming at John Candy. He finally had it, and he said, "Here's an idea. Next time you tell a story, have a point." That really spoke to me. Now, one other thing about stories, though, you write that most business stories are built as educational parables. Explain why that is problematic.
They're all about the end of the journey and not the journey, mm-hmm. you know? And the journey is what helps people connect. The part where you struggled and why you started and what you believe in, I believe is the most important stuff to share during your origin story to help people connect with you. And we give some incredible examples of how people do this in their own pitches. But I actually, ever since publishing the book, I believe that every person in your company should have an origin story of why they're at the company. Even if you're not the CEO and didn't start it, you should think about what in your childhood, in your experience, influenced you in such a way that brings you to this moment here today. And again, it helps paint a better 3D picture of yourself. If analyze them on a deeper level is understanding them in a full 3D picture, this is about demonstrating yourself in a full 3D picture.
Yes. Let me just quote from page 65, where you write, by overvaluing efficiency and the takeaway, they commit one of the gravest crimes against storytelling. They're all about the destination and treat the journey as an inconvenience. But the journey is the thing that grabs listeners, makes them sit forward in their seats. The journey is how we grow attached to the characters so that when something happens to them, we actually care. If that essential process hasn't happened, then the climax will be met with indifference, no matter how big the budget. And let me mention a book that was on the podcast a couple of years ago, but it was really good, called Sell with a Story by Paul Smith. And in that book, he outlines, I think it was like 24 different stories every company should have, not, in other words, the type of story, right? Mm-hmm. And salespeople can just fill that in. But it's one of them is the origin story, and there are several others. And even if you don't get all of them, just a few are so powerful. And I'll include a link to his interview. So let's go to include 3D objects. Explain what you mean when you write, of all the various myths about education, perhaps the most pervasive is the myth of different learning cycles. Go!
You know, you've heard that some people are auditory, some people are visual, some are kinesthetic learners.
Yeah.
Well, that has been disproven over and over again. The research has not been proven, and yet we're still teaching it to people. And even if you don't agree with me and don't want to Google the research after this, just know that we all memorize in the exact same way. So we might like audiobooks more than written books, but we still remember things in a visual format much, much better. And that is because the amount of space between our eyes and our memory banks is the shortest distance. And the vast majority of our memory is like over 50% from a visual input. So that means if you speak during your presentation or you have text in your presentation, that is not as memorable as having an image, which is not as memorable as having a three-dimensional object. And the science is so incredible after this that I made a decision to never walk into a room without a three-dimensional object again.
So when you're having to do an online presentation, is it something like where you might be able to send them something beforehand?
Yeah. So you can do three-dimensional objects where you are. So I will tell you, Douglas, when I start a keynote about curiosity and they introduce me on the screen, I will start my Star Wars music and I will bring up a lightsaber and I have a totally unique way of opening that, again, all we're trying to do is say to that brain, this is different. You've never seen anything like this before. And three-dimensional objects do that like nobody's business.
Oh, like what? So like if I were giving a presentation just through Zoom, having one right here with me.
Yes.
Could help. Okay. Well, when you mentioned Star Wars, I know my buddy James Earl Jones would approve.
I would appreciate that.
Yeah. Right. And hopefully he'll share this on social media because I know he wants me to text him as soon as I publish it. So can you say a little bit more about the power of putting something in the audience's hands, though, for when we are there in person?
Yeah. A lot of us sell like non-physical products. We sell ideas. Mm-hmm. And if we can find a way to turn it into a 3D object, it will just be so much more memorable. So I'll give you an example. My friend Abe is a cancer researcher, and his research is about how T cells can fight the cancer within your body. So you wouldn't need radiation, you wouldn't need chemotherapy. Like, what an incredible miracle cure. But when he goes to conferences, everybody there thinks they have a miracle cure for cancer, and everybody just wants to tell their thing.
It sounds like the lawyers you mentioned earlier.
Yeah, everybody's got a compelling case, you know? So my friend Abe had a 3D object made of a T-cell fighting a cancer cell, and imagine like a giant multicolored blob with little icicles of lights coming out of it, and it's like the size of his torso. So like pretty, you know, two feet by 2 feet in diameter. And he goes to conferences and he puts it on a table and he turns it on, and like a moth to a light, everyone at the conference comes to him to hear about what this thing is. And that's what three-dimensional objects do. They pique interest in the brain and they create curiosity that people need to satisfy. And so it is an unfair advantage for him at these conferences now.
Great. Well, I just want you to know that after this interview, I'm going to be mailing some three-dimensional objects to you and Jason. So,
hey-o.
Yeah. So
I can't wait.
I just have to ask, Diana Kander, what is the right way to breathe?
Oh, because I have the example of it in the book.
Well, but then I thought, wait a minute, maybe she wants to save that for her big keynotes, but come on.
No, I'm happy to share. I mean, it has nothing to do with this book, but...
No, it is. You know, you talked about how you get people to... this is part of the 3D objects part.
Yeah, well, if you get people to experience something physically, if you can go from telling them an idea to having them experience your idea, then they're much more likely to believe it and say it to themselves. So, for instance, when I do keynotes on how we have blind spots, I can say to the audience, like, we all have blind spots. And people will be like, sure, you know, that's an other people problem. But what I do is I have people vote on whether they're pretty good at breathing, you know, and it seems like such a silly question. And then we do an experiment where I have people take a breath and they put a hand on their chest and a hand on their stomach, and they try to notice which hand moves more while they're taking a breath. And one of those is the scientifically correct way to breathe.
And I hope that everyone listening is doing that right now, unless they're driving. Yeah. Yes.
Well, I don't want to. Well, I'll give away the answer. Well, one of them is the scientifically accurate way to breathe, and one of them negatively affects like your digestive system, how much sleep you're getting, your cardiovascular system, like every part of your body, your mood. And over 50% of the room do it the wrong way. And the people that do it the right way, they're only doing it correctly because somebody else told them, like a teacher who's a music teacher or a singing teacher or a karate teacher or a yoga teacher, taught them how to breathe correctly. And now when we go through that exercise and half the room figures out that this thing that they had nailed up until today, they're not doing right. Now they're more open to, oh, maybe I might have some blind spots in my work.
Yeah.
And that's the power of an experience.
Right. And like, if listeners want to know the correct answer, they need to hire Diana Kander for a keynote.
That's right.
Yeah. So I'm going to work with you here, Diana. Yeah. So let's go to...
C.
To round out the
magic.
You quote the Academy Award-winning director and decorated U.S. Army veteran,
hoo-ah!
Oliver Stone, who said, "The invitation to collaborate on an idea is a seduction." So C stands for co-create together. Explain the magic.
A lot of us go into a pitch with it fully baked, and we think our job is to impress and to show how put together we are. But what the research shows, and researchers followed people pitching to movie producers and CEOs, and those that had chunks of their presentation that were open for brainstorming together, those were the most successful pitches. So if you come in and you say, I have some chunks of this conversation that I would love for you to provide your input on, that is the ultimate act of seduction and getting buy-in from your audience.
So what would be an example? Like when you're doing, are you able to do this in your keynotes, or is there an example?
Oh, of course.
Talk to us about a way to co-create, or maybe one that you've done in your past.
Yeah, so I'll give you one that encompasses several of the elements, but when I start the Go Big or Go Home keynote, I ask what it feels like when you're being pitched, when you open your front door and there's somebody standing there with a clipboard and they say you've been pre-approved and you're like, oh my God, this is the worst, right? And then I say, well, I want us to, as a group, make the sound that feels like. And so I count to three, and then on the count of three, we're all like, whoa. You know, it's a gross sound that we've now made together.
Yeah.
And then I ask him to think about what it feels like when somebody pulls off a magic trick in front of them, and we make that sound. And when we make that sound, it's like, you know.
Uh-huh.
Now I'm saying I want us to feel, when we're pitching, we want to make the magic sound with our audience as opposed to the pitching sound.
Right.
And how do we get there? Yes.
Yeah.
And there's a chunk out of every presentation where I go through the moves. And then at the end, we create a top 10 list of takeaways where I don't do what you do every day, but I know these principles apply. So you tell me an example that you've seen in the industry or how you could apply this when you get back to the office. And that is usually the most rich part of the entire keynote, when people are like, oh, I saw somebody do this, or in my company, we did this, and they get to learn from each other. It's this beautiful co-creation moment.
Oh, love it. Love it. And as reading that chapter, I'm starting to think back on presentations where that had been done so effectively, and I appreciated it even more. So, Diana Kander, you are probably a Kansas City Chiefs fan. Is that right?
Pretty big. Pretty big Chiefs fan. Mm-hmm.
So, if it's okay, let's talk about another team.
Raider Nation, let's go, let's go. Raider Nation, let's go, let's go. Raider Nation, are you ready for some football?
Talk about how Tucker's firm tied all this together in a successful project for the Las Vegas Raiders.
Yeah, so Tucker printed the largest 3D printed object in the world.
Maybe we should back up and explain what his firm does.
They create experiences for sports teams, universities, organizations. They do what we're talking about doing in a sales pitch, but in a physical environment.
Right, right. Okay, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, it's no problem. And the entire book actually is the science behind why their methodology for closing deals is so effective. So Tucker's firm, when they have a standard pitch, they close about 45% of them. But when they do this magic framework, they'll close 90% of the deals. And these are the harder to win deals.
And those,
which is amazing.
His system is called LTF, which
That's
means
right.
land the
blank. Blinker.
Yes. Yeah. Family yes. podcast.
Quite the debate on whether we were going to call the book that.
Oh, really? Wow. Well, you could do like an alternate version for, you know.
Yes. A lot of people love the terminology and they embrace it in their own businesses. And I support that. I just didn't want to put it on the cover.
Right. Right. Because your kids would talk about it in school.
That's right.
Yeah. So talk to us about some of the things that they did, which touch on some of the magic.
Yeah, so they, you know, they're a firm from Kansas City, and they won making this incredible structure for the Las Vegas Raiders. And when I asked them how they did it, it's like one of their best LTFs of all time, which is kind of what sold me on even writing this book and understanding the science behind what it worked. But they had an opportunity, and the first thing they did was, of course, make it surprising. So creating surprise is about doing ordinary things in non-ordinary ways. And while they could have constructed it out of a traditional material, they were like, I read somewhere online that there's a 3D printer big
right.
enough to do this, even though nobody had ever bought a 3D printer that did that. Like they had only created one and they hadn't sold it yet.
Right. And I should interject that the assignment basically was to do a 9-story torch in honor of the late Al Davis.
That's right.
Okay.
It's a torch that you can see, torch that you can see from every seat in the stadium as well as from the Las Vegas Strip. It's a big torch.
Right.
And so they, Dimensional Innovations, was like, well, we could 3D print it, even though nobody's ever done that before. And they found a place on a Friday that had one that, again, they had never sold to anyone. And they got in the car and drove there to see it. And that's the thing, like never been done before is
yeah.
what feels really special to clients, right? To be able to say, I did this for I've never, you know, I told you about my friend's M&M dispenser, less impressive than a 3D printer, but I had never done that for anybody before. And that's how I think about making things surprising. Like, what can I do never been done before to make them feel special.
Yes, and the thing that struck me is the notion, I think I've heard Seth Godin say, if you're waiting for a case study in your industry, you're going to be too late. This is where you lean into doing something that hasn't been done before.
Yeah, how can we do something really unique?
Mm-hmm.
A, analyze them on a deeper level. Why, while they were preparing the pitch, they interviewed a bunch of individuals inside the Raiders organization. And at one point, they had prepared, they wouldn't be able to pitch directly to the decision makers, which
oh,
is
that's
also
right.
crazy.
Wizard of Oz scenario, yeah.
Yeah, so they had to make a video to kind of do their pitch for them. And so they sent the video to their supporters inside the Raiders organization. And those people are like, oh, you got to take this person out of the video. That'll ruin the whole pitch.
Yeah.
And so, like, there are things that you don't even know about what you're about to say that analyzing them and getting to know people inside will really help you make the case at a much better level,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Mm-hmm.
Give you the pitch in the right order. That video, which I think you can see on Dimensional Innovation's website, is all about the Raiders and how the Raiders are special. And if anyone is ever going to 3D print the world's biggest object, it should be the Raiders because that's their, like, MO.
Oh, I'll see if I can find it and include it on this episode's website page.
Yeah, it's amazing, and including 3D objects. So the way that the process worked is you show the video, and then the decision makers went into a giant warehouse where everyone pitching everything for the new stadium like had their stuff drawn out. Now, Dimensional Innovations, they brought in a piece of the 3D printed object that they were going to create, and it was like 10 feet tall and weighed 350 pounds. Like, it stood out. You know, like my friend Abe's model with the T-cell, it was so much bigger and shinier
yeah.
than everything else that it naturally just drew people to it.
And for this particular reader, when I read about that, it brought to mind the Statue of Liberty. When it was being built in France, they sent over just the torch part to New York to get people excited about it, so raise more money for it.
That's it. I can't stress enough how much ideas need physical representation in our physical world to really get people excited and mm-hmm. invested. And then C, co-create together. They had no access to the decision makers at the Raiders, but who they did have access to is the architect that was kind of create everything. So they spent as much time with the architect as possible and asked them to come up with ideas for the torch. And so they actually made time with the person that was going to be in the room with the decision makers and could provide their own two cents on why that made the most sense.
Mm, great story. Tied it together really well. So, Diana, if readers took only one thing away from the book, what would you hope it would be?
That we can create connection and trust with our prospects and customers at record speed if we just do something out of the ordinary.
Well said. Counterintuitive, of course, but your book shows how well it can work. So what's one thing a listener could do today to put in just one of the many ideas from your book to get them kind of marching in that direction?
I think you should think about your sales process like scenes from a movie and just pick one scene and think about how you could add a little bit of magic to it. It could be from how you do your signature line at the end of your email, just something super easy that is unique to you and authentic to you or has something to do with them, to doing a little bit of extra research on the next person you're going to go meet to see how much more of a connection you can make with somebody when you come in with psychographic information.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and it brings to mind the idea that I mention often on the podcast is if you and your friend are being chased by a bear, how fast do you have to run? The answer is just a little bit faster than your friend. So you don't have to do these things perfect, folks, but you can start to try them and the result can be dramatic. And then you'll probably want to start doing more and more. So, Diana, looking back, aside from legal textbooks, what books have most inspired your working career?
You know, I would read Keith Ferrazzi's Never Eat Alone like once a year for the first decade of my career. I think it's so good. It actually maybe is the origin story for this idea because it's about how to create real relationships with professional contacts.
Uh-huh. And that book has been mentioned over the years on the podcast and daggone it, I haven't read it. I think I better finally read it. Thank you. You've pushed me.
Absolutely.
Yeah, you've pushed me in that direction. So are there any recent or upcoming books that you recommend or are looking forward to reading?
I'm a huge Adam Grant fan, and he has a new book coming out, I think in October, called Hidden Potential. It's right up my alley about learning and curiosity, but how we get better at things, not by working hard, but by learning faster.
Oh, wow. Yeah, you cannot go wrong with Adam Grant. He's one of those authors where if there were a way to tell Amazon, look, whenever there's a new book, just go ahead and
send it.
just get it to me right away. Yeah. Well, at marketingbookpodcast.com, I'm going to include links to everything linkable, including all the books that have been mentioned, your website, your LinkedIn profile, your Twitter account, and also you've got a bonus. You go to gobigbonus.com, and I'm going to include a link to that where people can go and get bonuses. I actually went there today and provided my email address, downloaded it. Oh, yeah. I'm all in.
For your listeners, Douglas, I told you I had a surprise at the end, and they've made it this far, so we should reward them.
Is it Taco Bell discount coupons?
No, I want to give them a free copy of the book.
You're kidding. Really?
Really?
Wow.
You know, if you don't want to buy a physical copy, you want a free digital one, whatever it is, you just email me. I'm Diana@DianaCander.com, and you tell me why you want the book, and I'm more than happy to send you a free digital version.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
That's my pleasure.
Very, very generous of you. That's something we don't often hear on the Marketing Book Podcast. Let me ask you about one other thing that I noticed you have in the book, nominateanatural.com. Tell us about that.
Yes. We have in the book a way for you to acknowledge somebody that is a natural at the Go Big or Go Home method. They already do these sorts of things that we've talked about on their own, and maybe we can make them even better or help them understand the science behind what they do that's working. So we have a form for you. It's nominateanatural.com. I can't believe I got that .com, where you can acknowledge somebody that you know, and we'll send them a physical copy of the book.
That's great. Again, wow. I just think I looked up generous in the dictionary. There you are. So
well, you know what? I care about this idea, and I want to get it out into the world, and I see the impact that it's had on my business. I am closing more deals. I am creating deeper connections with my customers, and I am having so much more fun. Like, the Go Big or Go Home method is fun because it makes you take a step back and really think about why you care about people. And I just want to share this with as many people as possible.
Well, thank you. And I appreciate the opportunity to talk to you about it. Now, I want to send a message to the listener. I want to ask you a big favor. Please reach out in some way to Diana and congratulate her on the book and thank her for being a guest on the Marketing Book Podcast. Send her an email. She just gave you her email. Come on, folks. And she's put up with some really stupid jokes. And she's a very funny person, so that's really kind of even more torture for her. But guests on the show have told me that they really enjoy hearing from Marketing Book Podcast listeners. And, you know, Diana, not just because Marketing Book Podcast listeners are so ridiculously good looking. And if you are listening on your smartphone and you've subscribed to the Marketing Book Podcast on, you know, something like Apple Podcasts, all these links can be found by going to this episode right now and clicking on this episode's website link. Final quote, page, let's see here. Wait for it.
I was getting nervous. I thought I had to give the final quote.
No.
It's you.
Yeah. No. 111. So, folks, it is a short book. That's it. That's the book. We shared everything we've learned about creating the types of presentations that stand out and help you win. If you've got a presentation that matters, we hope that this book serves as your blueprint for adding some magic to the experience. And although not every go big or go home pitch will lead to a win, they will almost always start a relationship with the prospect or lead to other opportunities in the future. And most importantly, your go big or go home pitch will help communicate your personality and how much enthusiasm you have for the work that you do. The book is Go Big or Go Home, 5 Ways to Create a Customer Experience That Will Close the Deal. The authors are Diana Kander and Tucker Trotter. Diana, thank you very much for joining us on the Marketing Book Podcast.
Thank you so much, Douglas.
And that closes the book on another episode of the Marketing Book Podcast. I hope you enjoyed it and found it helpful. If you are one of the hundreds of listeners who have left an iTunes review, please let me return your kind favor by mailing you some Marketing Book Podcast bookmarks and laptop stickers. Just send me your mailing address anywhere in the world, and I'll drop it in the mail. And remember the words of the entrepreneur, author, and motivational speaker Jim Rohn, who said, "Formal education will make you a living. Self-education will make you a fortune."
It's Can-Can, over 50 years of endless deals.
Now, ShopRite does the Can-Can, selling lots of brands on everything in Can-Can. Today is great to save some cash, so come to ShopRite's Can-Can Bash. Can-Can, you save much more on every brand. Can-Can.
Find endless deals at ShopRite's Can-Can Sale. Going on now. You can't miss it.
Ever tried reading while jogging, cooking, or even juggling flaming torches? Yeah, doesn't end well. But with audiobooks.com, you can conquer books without the circus act. Dive into over 450,000 titles, including more than 10,000 free ones. Get hooked on a bestseller, find your next obsession, or finally read that classic you've been avoiding since high school. And here's the inside scoop. Sign up today for a free 30-day trial and snag your first three audiobooks on the house. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcastfree today. That's audiobooks.com/podcastfree